Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network, playing every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today on Fired Up with CJ, I have Casey Golden, who has spent the last, I don't know if it's 20 or 30 years, working with the government and businesses in developing state and local government policies in support of a more ecologically sustainable future. Welcome, Casey.
Hey, CJ. Thanks for having me.
So is it 20 or 30? I recall you saying it was 30, but then I saw on the website it was 20. Which is
it? Too many, you know, a whole bunch. Decades and decades.
Decades and decades. All right. So, you know, one of the things I, to prepare for this show, I'd read through a whole bunch of materials. I went through your website. I looked at a whole bunch of YouTube clips. And I'm not very scientifically inclined. I think it's probably one of the lowest grades I got in when I was younger. So it's kind of hard for me to even really comprehend a lot of these things. But here's what I walked away with after having read and digested all this stuff, with just kind of this kind of nightmare scenario like you may see on those disaster movies where, you know, tsunamis hit, you know, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And I walked away out of all reading all this information kind of scared. Feeling a sense of hopelessness and kind of just feeling despondent. So I'm going to have folks, just so you can actually feel these same emotions. I'm going to try to have all the listeners be in a sense of fear, hopelessness, and despondency too, so you can join me. Okay, so Chris is going to play a clip of all the potential future, what the future would look like if we don't address global warming.
Then we'll snap out of it. Don't despair.
Okay, well, still, we're not going to keep you in the sense of despondency, but I want to tell you that we're there with you. Okay.
As long as industrialized nations consume energy and developing countries increase their fossil fuel consumption, the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere will continue to rise. Researchers predict that temperatures will increase about 2 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. What's less certain is what rising temperatures mean for the planet. Some climate models predict subtle changes. Others forecast rising sea levels, which could flood coastal areas around the world. Weather patterns could change, making hurricanes more frequent. Severe droughts could become more common in warm areas, and species unable to adapt to the changing conditions would face extinction.
So, Casey, a lot of what they say in the clip is, you know, the you know, things will melt, the temperatures will go up, things will melt. I mean, it just sounds, you know, species will die, all these different nightmare scenarios. How have you seen people react to emotionally when they hear of these doom and gloom scenarios?
Well, you know, CJ, let me just say first, you know, you said all these things will happen. They'll only happen if we do the wrong thing. We know how to do something different. So The question is what kind of choices we'll make, right? It's not like a weather phenomenon that we just predict. It's a function of human choices. So let me just say that. But to answer your question about the kinds of emotional response, I have to say I think the most prominent, the most prevalent one is that people want to tune it out. People don't actually fully engage it emotionally because they don't feel empowered by and large to do much about it. And if you can't do anything about it, why let in a problem that big that you can't do anything about? Most people have plenty of problems that they actually can do something about. And so those are the ones that they tend to want to focus their attention and their emotional reactions and their engagement and their personal effort on, rather than big scary things they can't do something about. So I think for most folks, we put it in the box in our minds that we reserve for, you know, sort of acts of God and biblical phenomena, and we're not the players in that story. So most folks, I think, actually don't spend a lot of time running around being scared about it because they don't let it in far enough to even want to be scared of it.
Right. They go into a state of denial is what I'm, it's like, oh, I can't bother, you know, I can't really do anything about it, so why bother?
Right, I mean, exactly. I think most folks at some level that global warming is real, the science is settled, we understand how this works, and it's going to be bad if we don't do something. So I don't think, you know, there are some people who deny that, but for the most part, I think people believe in science. I think the bigger hurdle is the idea that this means us. We're the heroes or the villains in this picture. We can either choose to accept this or do something different. That's where I think people have a hard time believing that, we can really, solve it and that we can really act and win at that scale.
Why do you think that's so? Why do you think that we feel unempowered or, you know, that it's an act of God and not an act of ourselves, that we can be heroes? Why do you think that's so?
I think there's at least two things going on. One is, it is pretty darn big. Most of us, it really does require national and global solutions. Now, most of us know what kind of choices we make about our transportation and what kind of light bulbs we choose, and we know that that's somehow part of the picture, but it seems so small compared to the problem. And if, you know, nations and global treaties aren't taking the right kind of action, what can my little light bulb possibly do? So I think that's part of it. And I think the other part of it, the reason that it's particularly difficult now, is we have lost confidence in the ability of our institutions to do anything very big anymore, anything very important anymore, anything together anymore. People use the example of World War II as a time in our historical memory when we sort of had this cultural experience of all banding together to do something really important. There was Rosie the Riveter saying we can do it, and, you know, there was this sense of, you know, will I save gas? Will I be part of the world? Of course I will. That's what we're doing. We're all doing that together. Well, we don't even do wars that way anymore. So I don't think that most of us have had the experience of all of us really banding together to do something really big and important. And our political leaders and our political institutions tend not to call us to those bigger collective enterprises anymore. And without that big collective effort, it's hard to imagine how you solve the problem. So I think that's why people don't want to let it in.
Do you go through meltdown scenarios in your mind, too? I know my husband has a scenario where, you know, we actually move out to a farm and grow food. God help me. I'm the worst gardener in the world. And, like, thank God we're in Seattle because we'll have adequate supplies of fresh water. I mean, he goes there pretty quickly. What's your meltdown scenario?
Well, you know, this isn't like nuclear war, right, where there would be a sudden catastrophic global transition that everybody would have to, you know, run out and get in the car and go someplace. There will be catastrophic consequences from global warming, but it's not that kind of, you know, sort of all at once, everywhere at the same time kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, I guess the answer to your question is no, I don't spend a lot of time doing that. You know what my nightmare is? My nightmare is like one of those dreams where you're kind of like you're running as fast as you can and you can't get anywhere, or like where you're screaming at the top of your lungs and nobody can hear you. It's my nightmare is a futility nightmare, is a feeling like we actually know what we need to do, and we know who needs to take responsibility to do it. We know it's us, and we know where to start. We know how to begin. We know how to harness clean energy sources and make the transition from fossil fuels to clean energy. And it's as though we just can't, you know, get the traction. We can't activate. We can't start running and nobody can hear us. And we're at some level not choosing to recognize, either the problem or our own infinite capacity to be part of the solution. And that we drop the ball just because we don't ever rise to the occasion and do those things we know how to do. That's my nightmare.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I actually have the same kind of nightmare where actually someone's – the only addition is that someone's chasing me with a knife, and then I fall, and then I can't get up. That's the same kind of like running down the street. And I think it is kind of that. And it does feel like kind of that nightmare where you feel like you're running really fast. You're trying to change the situation. It feels, you know, you can't run fast enough. But I think you're right that we do have the infinite capacity and we have to rise up and make it happen. I mean, is that what gives you faith every day? I mean, because you've been doing this for like decades, like you said. What gives you the faith to just continue on?
You know, every day I walk into the office and I work with this fantastic group of people. And every day we connect with people out in the community who are making this transition real, who are taking this transition to heart, and they're saying, in my home, in my community, in my family, in my state, in my region, I am going to be responsible for being part of the solution, and I'm not going to take no for an answer from the leaders who say that we can't do this. And, you know, I spend my days among those people constantly being refreshed and re-inspired about what's possible and what people are actually doing in our communities to make it real. So that's plenty of fuel for me.
Cool. And we'll talk about that during the third segment because I do want to actually hear some good stories because we get inundated with all the nightmare scenarios, not often hearing all the positive things that people are doing and that do make a difference and that give us faith. Like you were saying before, we actually get to the point of like losing faith, losing trust that it can be done. So I want to hear some of those too. So Casey Golden, a pioneer in leading and our local hero in the Northwest for making changes in state and local climate policies on Fired Up with CJ and Transformation Talk Radio Network. Up next, how do we address our doubts and other skepticisms about global warming, if in fact they still exist? You want to know more about Casey or listen to other shows like this, check it out at www.firedupwithcj.com or climatesolutions.org.
Bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
So this may sound simple, but when you're planning a road trip, you have to figure out where you're going first. With the Take Shape for Life program, the destination is living life at optimal health. So what does that mean? It means more energy. It means less medications. And yes, it means losing the extra pounds, which is actually part of the getting there. Talk to a Take Shape for Life health coach who's been there. Listen to their story and their journey. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
Golden, who was one of the chief engineers in creating Seattle's leading-edge clean energy and climate protection initiatives. This segment, how do we address our doubts and other skepticism about global warming? And so we're going to start off the segment with a clip from 2007 with Glenn Beck. And I think that this is endemic of the kind of debate that at least was happening in 2007 and at least I can say personally continues to happen at least among my side of the family, their family members. So here's the clip.
Facts that I was finding was the fact that no one wanted to talk about those facts. If a scientist says the temperatures are up 0.01 degree, lead story around the country in every newspaper. But when somebody with decades of experience comes out and says global warming is a manufactured crisis, no one cares, and you can hear a pin drop. How do I know? because that is exactly what happened last week when the founder of the Weather Channel wrote an article that began, and I quote, "It is the greatest scam in history. I'm amazed, appalled, and highly offended by it. Global warming. It is a scam."
So, Casey, I know it's really hard not to respond to those kind of clips because they actually make my blood boil. But what's your reaction to those types of kind of confrontational clips about global warming and whether it's real or not?
Yeah, well, you know, we're all entitled to our own opinions, but we're not entitled to our own facts. And this is not like a cable news deal, right, where you just kind of tune into the person who agrees with you philosophically and that's where you get your information from. That's not how science works. Science is actually a rigorous process of testing alternative hypotheses and arguing and using data and arriving at what we understand through our best cognitive abilities to be the factual, objective truth of the matter. And on some things, there is a physical truth of the matter. There is an objective reality. And if we didn't believe that, then we wouldn't have been able to make, you know, airplanes that actually do fly and stay up in the air and iPhones that work and medicines that actually cure people and all those good things that science has delivered. So this isn't one of those deals where it's like an ideological political football. It actually is an objective physical reality. It's been measured. The scientists aren't arguing about it anymore. The National Academy of Sciences says it's settled fact. And, you know, don't listen to me. I'm not a climate scientist. Glenn Beck isn't a climate scientist. Go to the National Academy of Sciences. See what the scientists are saying. And don't go to the chosen scientist of somebody who's got a particular political agenda. You know, there's lots of great things for us to disagree about in the world based on our political philosophies or our political party or whatever. But objective science shouldn't be one of them. We all ought to work with the same facts.
And where would you start your engagement to, like, learn more so that you can get, and I know that you probably, people are like, well, he has a bias too, but anyways, where would you say would be a good place to start to get some data so that you can judge yourself whether you think it's real or not?
There's two good climate websites run by climate scientists called Climate Central and Real Climate. But if you don't, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, Glenn Beck could send you to his own website, but go to the scientists. Go to the National Academy of Sciences. Go to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the collaboration of scientists from all around the world. Go to the, you know, the American Geophysical Union or any of the official scientific organizations and look at what they have to say.
Why do you think that Glenn Beck and others are creating this as if it's a political dialogue when in fact it really is scientific fact? Why do you think people continue to have that debate when it is fact?
I think for somebody like Glenn Beck, they think that if this problem is real, that means that government is going to have to do something pretty serious and ambitious about it. And their political philosophy is that government shouldn't do anything serious and ambitious. They want smaller government. They want less government. They want, you know, in some extreme cases, no government. So I think it's one of those deals like we can't possibly have that problem because that problem requires a solution from government that's inconsistent with my political philosophy. But that's a funny way to look at the objective reality, you know. I think that's a lot of where it comes from. I think the reason that some people still listen to it, for some people it's because they feel really strongly about their political philosophy and they agree with Glenn Beck. I think for more people, people who are, you know, sort of generally more reasonable and open to the facts, I think one of the obstacles to absorbing and understanding the facts is just that sense that we really do know what to do about this. This is a problem we can solve. And I got to say, for a lot of people, you know, we all run around with, you know, trying to take care of our families or a sick parent or to make sure that, you know, we've got a good job going forward. We got real problems that we're really on point for solving. Nobody's eager to take responsibility for a big problem that's out of the scope and scale of their responsibility. So I think some people sort of take comfort in the idea that, well, you know, maybe the science is kind of uncertain. Because I'd rather believe that than believe we've got this terrible problem that I don't know what to do about.
Right, right. Well, it's a classic state of denial, right? So it's like I'll do something else, like read, you know, mail or read more people debating about this. When in fact you would be better served by just looking at the data. in the science. Like you said, it's the facts are facts. What proof did you need to know? And when did you start getting worried about global warming? And what proof did you yourself have to see in order to feel convinced it was real?
Well, it was 1988 when the nation's foremost climate scientist, Dr. Jim Hansen of NASA, went before Congress and on the basis of years and years of studies said, we've got a serious problem on our hands. It's caused by humans and in large part by fossil fuel burning, and we've got to do something about it. Now, I had been hearing about science on global warming since before that, and I think a lot of people suspected and were concerned about it before that, and I was concerned, but I think that was generally goes down in history, that testimony before Congress, as sort of the watershed moment when it really became irresponsible to just assume that we didn't have a problem here, when we really knew to the best of our scientific ability that there was a high probability that this was a big problem that we needed to do something about. 1988. I have two kids, one of them's a sophomore in college, and she was not born in 1988, and now she's a sophomore in college, and we still have no national climate policy. From time to time, she calls me and reminds me of this. Says, Dad, you work at Climate Solutions. What gives? When are we going to speed this up? So we've known the truth about climate science for plenty long to be doing a lot more than we've done so far.
Well, just out of curiosity, what was it about? Was it Jim Henson? Was it data? What was the most compelling part that you thought, okay, now I'm worried? You know, you'd heard lots and lots of data, but for you, what about that presentation by Jim Henson kind of threw you over the edge?
Well, there's sort of a left side of the brain and a right side of the brain answer, right? I did go far enough into the basic climate information. And again, I'm not a scientist. I'm not some kind of a atmospheric sciences genius. It's not that complicated. And looked enough at the data and looked at the trend and the accumulation and where the scientists say it's going if we don't change our habits and particularly our energy systems. And looked at the impacts that they projected on things like snowpack and species and sea level rise. So it was just, sort of absorbing in the intellectual part of my brain that information. But then on the more sort of anecdotal and intuitive side of my brain, I'm a creature of the Northwest. I love mountains and rivers. I'm a kayaker and a rafter. Here in the Northwest, we rely on snowpack to store our abundant winter precipitation so that we've got water all year round for agriculture, for water supply, for rivers, for fish, for all of that. And when we realized that we were starting to lose that natural water supply and everything that that means for what makes the Northwest work and for, my special place on the planet, that sort of hit me at a different level that really mattered a lot to me, too.
Mm. So I guess how do we get other people to have the aha? Because I think the data, so it's almost like we also have to examine the kind of the left and the right brain parts of our brain to look at the data, but then also look at what you want the world to be like, right? And whether what this scenario of sea levels rising, species dying, this is how we want the world to look like or not, right? I mean, what's that threat? And I don't think enough of us do. The kind of intuitive part, I think. We probably don't do either, the right brain or the left brain part of it, honestly. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I'd say, well, we are having a hard time collectively getting our minds and hearts around climate change per se. I would bet you that most people from all political persuasions have an uneasy feeling that continuing to rely on fossil fuels, coal and oil and gas, with all that that means for national security, for our economic systems, for our environmental systems, that that's not going to really work for the long haul. I bet everybody at some level shares that uneasy feeling. And at an intuitive level, at an intellectual level, I think most people know that that's a dead-end street. Mm-hmm. And I think really, you know, in a big way, the aha moment is, well, so now what? What are we going to do that's different? What are we going to do that's better? What are we going to do that's going to work? What are we going to do that's going to allow us to have a good lifestyle and a job and a decent economy without all those fossil fuels? And I find that a lot of times the aha moment is when they find out about their utility investing in a wind power plant, or the fact that now electric cars are going to be available on the market, or just much more efficient cars than they have now, or that a public transportation option has become available to them that they didn't have before, and that, you know what, it's actually pretty fun. I can read instead of driving. I think those are the aha moments when we start to get a sense that, yeah, that dead-end road that we all know that we're on, there's another road. There's a better road, and I can start walking down that road. I think those are the key aha moments.
Yeah, and knowing, and the thing that's so interesting to me is the thing that you said earlier, which is we know what to do. It's not what we're like, what are we going to do? We know what we have to do. We just have to do it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Casey Golden, who is one of the chief engineers in creating Seattle's leading-edge work in clean energy and climate protection initiatives, I'm Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Up next, I think we've talked a lot about accountability, but who's accountable and for what in terms of our future? Want to know more about Casey or listen to the other shows like this? Check it out at www.fireitupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
Bogged down by your daily grind, not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
Now is the perfect time to learn Tai Chi and Qigong. These ancient Chinese healing arts, also called mind-body practice, are simple to learn, clinically proven to be effective, and can be practiced by anyone, anywhere, at any time. For 10 years, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi has been a respected leader in mind-body practice training. Visit IIQTC.org. Empower yourself, empower others. Visit IIQTC.org for more information on mind-body practice. IIQTC.org.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment on Fired Up with CJ, Casey Golden, a Northwest leader in the national climate movement, discussing who's really accountable and what are they accountable in terms of the future of our planet. So that's my first question, Casey. Who is accountable for rebuilding this ecological sustainable future? It's hard to say. Who's ultimately responsible?
Every one of us. It's going to take all hands on deck with sleeves rolled up, right? I will say I want to encourage your listeners to take a special responsibility, because it does seem so big that you always feel like, okay, well, I'll do my part, but are we really going to do the big thing together? And I think we Americans have a special responsibility in this picture, because I think we always have to remember that even though these are relatively hard economic times for us, there are billions of people in the world who could only dream of the kind of lifestyles and the kind of advantages that we've enjoyed in the U.S., and they all want that too. So as the people who have, built the most prosperity in the world and the people who have created the most global warming pollution, we have a special responsibility. Think of people, in the Maldives or in Bangladesh or in all these places in the world where they've done almost nothing to cause this problem, and they're the ones who are going to experience the worst of the consequences, right? That's not fair. We have done a lot to solve this problem. We're relatively resilient in our communities because we're not as vulnerable to floods and to health disasters because we have a pretty good infrastructure in this country. So that means we have a special responsibility to be the people who pioneer solutions, who show a good way, a sustainable way of prospering in the world that's going to work for us, but that ultimately is going to work for all those other people who want what we have.
Right. And I'm hearing just a stewardship, right? And also the responsibility. So give me a sense of numbers, and I don't want to go into too much data, but we are the number one producer of global warming. And is that in an order of like twice? Give us a sense of order of magnitude.
China surpassed us as the world's largest emitter in the last couple years. But remember, global warming pollution lasts for a long time. So we've still emitted the most, and it's still up there in the atmosphere, and it's still causing its warming. So we're still the champion emitters, although on an annual basis, China's now producing more than us. But, of course, we're producing a lot more than China on a per capita basis, something like about five times the average American produces about five times as much as the average Chinese, 10 or 12 times the average Indian. We produce about 5% of the population. We use 35% of the gasoline. We produce about a quarter of the global warming pollution. So we have a lot of the responsibility, but we also have a lot of the opportunity because we have built a relatively advanced, prosperous society. We have a lot of technological know-how, and we get to be the people who pioneer a better way, a sustainable way to go forward. And when I say sustainable, I want to make it clear that what I mean is not just that it's okay environmentally, that it can last for a long time, but also that it works for a lot more people than our current way of generating economic security does. A lot more people in this country who have not enjoyed the privileges that some of us have, and a lot more people around the world who want to enjoy economic security just like Americans and Europeans do.
Let me ask you a question going back to the original thing that everyone has to roll up their sleeves. I think most of the people, hope that the government's going to take care of it and that, we need to have an energy policy, a credible one, since we've been talking about it since 1988, according, I think everyone probably shares the frustration of your daughter. Who is everyone? There's, you and me, the person who's like walking on the street, there's businesses, there's government. What specifically do each of us have to do?
Yeah. Well, we all have to be part of the solution as individuals and in our own lives and in our communities and in our congregations, in our schools and our offices. That's where we all use energy. And so as energy users, we all need to be part of the solution, using more efficient appliances and light bulbs, using alternatives to driving alone for transportation. Folks are largely familiar with those kind of solutions. Those are terribly important. But let me go back to what you said about all of us feeling frustrated that our political institutions and our leaders haven't done more. I was born in 1959, and Dwight Eisenhower was president. every president in my whole life has said some words to the effect of, we're addicted to fossil fuels, or we need to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels. And every president has left office with America more dependent than when they took office. And so we feel cynical about that, right? We feel frustrated about that. Sometimes we feel hopeless about that. What I want to suggest about that is we should feel frustrated. We should feel mad. We should feel impatient. But we should not feel cynical. Because once we feel cynical, then we're throwing in the towel. Then we're giving them permission. As citizens in a democracy, we're saying to our leaders, you know what? I didn't really expect you to do much better than that anyway. And that feeds on itself, right? The more we have those low expectations for our leaders, the more they think it's safe to continue to fail to deliver. So I just want to ask folks, you know, when you say who's responsible, as citizens, I think we're responsible for holding that line between cynicism and frustration or impatience. Frustration and impatience are good. We should demand a lot more out of our leaders. But let's not sort of wallow in cynicism. That just lets them off the hook.
So what do we do? What are some things that we can do or examples where you think, you know, here's good examples where citizens took effective action, held their leaders accountable, and created something great?
Well, should we talk about personal lifestyle things first or citizenship things first?
You pick.
Okay, well, let's start personal, right? It always starts with the individual. I talked a little bit about our energy choices, and that really is the single biggest thing we can do. For a lot of us, especially here in the Northwest, a lot of it is about our transportation choices, but it's the kind of energy we use in our buildings and homes. It's how much energy we use in our buildings and homes. And it's very largely about our transportation choices. And folks in the Northeast are lucky to have better developed public transportation systems where you have more practical, convenient alternatives to cars than we do here out west. I'm a bicycle commuter myself, and it's less a philosophical thing and more of a spiritual and mental health thing. I just love being on my bike. I love getting out every day. I love getting a chance to breathe on the way to work and getting a chance to unwind a little bit on the way home to work, and I see my neighbors more, and I notice what's springtime now, and I notice things are starting to bloom. So I think it's a big, big step up in quality of life if you can ride your bike to work, walk to work, get outside, do something other than be stuck in your car in traffic. Those are incredibly important things. And then the other thing I would add just on a personal level is probably a lot of people are now seeing more and more of these farmers markets pop up, more and more opportunities to eat things that are grown close to home. There's all kind of good about local food, you know. And is local food a conservative thing or a liberal thing? Who knows? You know, it's a local thing. It's a neighbor thing. It's a healthy thing. It's less global warming pollution using all that oil to get a hard, tasteless strawberry from California to New York because you're growing a good strawberry in New York. You know, that's just a terrific solution that, you know, really helps out on the big problem, but I also think is a huge, huge boost to quality of life. If we know where our food's coming from, it's tastier, it's healthier, it's better for the planet.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things that I'll mention too, and as a coach, because I think it's very overwhelming, even when you know what to do, is you get overwhelmed. Because you were mentioning earlier, you know, you have, you know, all your other to-dos and your family members and your work and you have, and all this stuff can just be like, oh, yet another thing I have to do. You know, take the bus. That's going to add 20 minutes onto my, you know, or walk. Oh my gosh, you know, I won't have enough time. And I think that one thing that I'll encourage as a coach, and I know happens to people, is they get overwhelmed. So try to do one thing at a time, right? You may not be able to do all of these things, but do one thing. You know, do one thing a week. Do one thing a month. Do whatever it's going to take to have you make steady progress. Because I think if you try to consume too much, that's when I think people get overwhelmed and then can't deal. So, you know, take the bus one day during the week. Eat locally, when you go to the grocery store the following week or the next month, you know, pick something that's locally grown versus something that's from Chile or from California. But start small and then move up, because that's when you feel like, okay, I can handle it, and move up when you feel like you can handle more. But I think the thing, sometimes you hear these long lists and you just get overwhelmed, and then you get into, like, doing nothing. So that's my only coach-like advice for what you'd mentioned.
Good call. Good advice.
Yeah. And you know what? Unfortunately, we have to go to break, but I want to hear some of the other good things that what we can do in terms of working with our elected officials.
Great.
Climate
Let's do
change
that
leader Casey Golden discussing who's accountable for our future. Up next, we're going to be talking about some simple actions that we can take. If you want to know more about Casey or listen to other shows like this, check it out at www.climateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclimateclim
Bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Are you ready to tap into the healer within? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the real doctor is the source that lives within you, that heals within you minute by minute every day? The healer within is the innate intelligence of the human body. When we cut our hand with a piece of glass, we don't have to command the body to close the wound and grow new skin. It knows how to heal itself. We do have to nourish the skin by disinfecting it and remove the glass, or it cannot heal. The innate healer relies upon us to assist in this healing process. Our role is to identify its needs, provide the substances required for the healing, and remove the obstacle. CRA, Contact Reflex Analysis, is an energy assessment which translates human energy into information. This information provides me with the ability to identify your needs as a healer and to design a specific solution for you. Contact us to achieve optimal health at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232, and visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment, I'm Fired Up with CJ, Casey Golden, a Northwest leader in the national climate movement, discussing what simple actions we can take. Now, Casey, in the last segment, we were talking about holding our leaders accountable. And then my question for you is, you know, what can we do as citizens to hold our leaders accountable? What are some specific actions we should take?
Yeah, well, I've got a great one, a new one, and a new favorite that I'm really excited about. There's an organization called 350.org, and it's just the number, 350.org. They started out as a bunch of college students working with the environmental author Bill McKibben to begin to start a global climate movement. They're now actually working all over the world, and they've done a bunch of really fun campaigns. And when you go to their website, they're very good at engaging you directly in ways that help hold our leaders accountable. Right now, they've just started a campaign about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has been taking money from just a few of the big fossil fuel companies and fighting the national effort to have a good climate and energy policy. That campaign is at chamber.350.org. And it's a great campaign because it enables people to go out to their local business people and say the U.S. Chamber, when they say that we don't want a responsible climate policy, we don't want a clean energy policy, the U.S. Chamber doesn't speak for me. That's these plucky college kids are taking on one of the major centers of power that's been slowing us down and keeping us from turning to a clean energy future. And their website really helps you engage in a really practical, easy way. Another thing I would say, you know, sort of getting off the online approach to this is you would be surprised how elected officials at all levels, city council folks, state legislators, even members of Congress, when they hear from people out in the community at a community meeting, at one of these town hall meetings, when they run into somebody in the grocery store, that those kind of contacts with elected officials have a huge amount of influence on how they think and what they think they need to do when they go back. Now, I don't want to, be a Pollyanna about it or underestimate the influence of big money on our elected officials. That's real. And not all of us have a lot of money to throw at campaigns the way some of the big corporate interests do. But I can tell you that when you run into your, state elected representative in the grocery store and you tell them how you're feeling, if you tell them, what are you doing to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels? What are you doing to help us respond to the climate crisis? They will take that to heart. That's not the whole game, but it's an important part of the game. And what they know, what they think, they're thinking in the back of their head is, wow, this person came up to me in the grocery store and started talking about this. I bet this is on voters' minds. This is something I got to think about if I want to continue to be in office. So those are just a couple of my favorite examples.
Yeah, or writing, right? I mean, there's probably letter campaigns. I know that and I worked with the city council when I was working as the neighborhood president, and they really do read the letters that you send. And the more letters that say the same thing over and over again, they know that it's true and people really are concerned and they're more apt to do something about it. So, I think writing letters make a huge difference, writing editorials. I think all of this stuff is good. So,
writing them in your own words, like they do get a little numb to sort of the organized letter writing efforts where everybody says exactly the same thing. But if you say just a little bit about why you care, why as a parent or as a person from a particular community, you think it's critical that they address this, just a little bit of that personal touch really goes a long way.
Right. To the beginning maybe of a form letter. So they're like, okay, this is something, this is a real person versus just someone having to forward it, much less of an effort associated with it. So we've talked a lot about the doom or gloom. If you were to have a vision of the future that's really inspiring, where in fact, we do what we need to do, we roll our sleeves up, everyone does, what's the glowing gem at the end? What could the world look like if we do all these things?
Well, if you think about it, the key to this whole transition is reducing and ultimately ending our addiction to fossil fuels and replacing that with a clean energy economy, right? That's what's driving the emissions for the most part is the fossil fuel burning. Well, what does that look like? What does a clean energy economy look like? What kind of opportunities are there? How's it gonna work? How am I gonna get a job in that? And what I want to say about that is, if you're just thinking, solar panels and windmills, you're thinking too small. A clean energy economy, an economy that really ends our addiction to fossil fuels, is an economy that has a lot more easy to use, fast, convenient transportation alternatives to being in your car. So it means more investment in public transit, more people using public transit, communities that are organized in a way that people can get around and you can get from work to the store to your entertainment without having to get in your car as much. That's a community that in many ways is going to be, a lot more appealing to live in. It also means millions and millions of new jobs in the fastest growing, most promising new economic sectors of the 21st century. And again, if you're just thinking about solar panels and windmills, you're not getting the full scope of this. Those solar and clean energy, factories and technologies are obviously a big part of the transition, but every company, every business, every commercial enterprise has an opportunity to be part of the clean economy. Here in the Pacific Northwest, some of our big icons like Boeing, more and more people are employed at Boeing now trying to figure out how to make super efficient planes so they can outcompete their competitors in the airplane manufacturing business. They're trying to figure out how to manufacture advanced biofuels from biomass, from plant matter, so they can stop being so dependent on foreign oil supplies. All those people at Boeing, our big traditional employer, are having green jobs. We got people at Microsoft who are trying to figure out how to eliminate the need for air travel or car travel by having better office-to-office communications and smarter offices and smarter cars. Well, all those software jobs, one of the biggest drivers in our economy, those are becoming green jobs as well. So no matter what kind of business you work in, whether it's a clean energy business or a traditional business, all of them have opportunities to grow, to create new jobs, and to create more fulfilling, promising careers for the future in this new economy we're going to be building.
And I'll just say one thing before we have to close, is that we, my husband and our family went to Copenhagen, and I know you went there recently as well. And I have to tell you, people there, vast majority of them are riding bikes. They're healthy. They look beautiful. I mean, you don't have to go get a detox because you can actually lead a healthy lifestyle where you're riding bikes. They have big carts on it so that they have their PCs and stuff in these huge carts, that wooden carts that they have attached to these bikes. And they're happy. It's like one of the happiest places in the country, right, or in the world. So I think they've done metrics on people who are happy, and they're happy there. And so I
really
think there's
true, and it's not just Denmark.
Yeah.
You know, all over Western Europe, bicycle use is much higher. Their cars, you know, they have plenty of trucks and cars, and very comfortable lifestyles, in many ways lifestyles that are, you know, sort of more attractive than ours. They have lower incarceration rates, they have higher life expectancy, and they're doing it all with about half as much energy as we do. So we have tons of opportunities to waste less energy and live better lives.
So on that note, I want to thank you, Casey, for your incredible passion and continuing to hold the torch and expect much more from us. And I think that people should expect more from us, right? We're capable of it. We know what to do. It's time to do it. There's also the Earth Day has a billion acts of green, I think it's called. And I actually went on that website. They have a lot of fantastic ideas for people who want to individually take responsibility and do things to change your lifestyle. So thanks to Chris at WBLQ. Next Thursday, we'll continue having, it's a month of our environment, we'll continue having some discussions with our environmental leaders. Please tune in. Have a great week, and we'll see you on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.